This episode was sponsored by Critical Dice and the Endless Bag of Dice.
Welcome to the Compendium, a resource designed to help you spend less time learning D&D and more time actually playing. Hi everyone, welcome back to the Compendium. I am your host Casey, and with me is my co-host Jason, and walking D&D dictionary, as I like to call him. We are back to actually finish out the races that are listed in the player's handbook. With half orcs. So last week we talked about half elves, and we're going into another half race this episode. But this is going to be a really weird one because we're not used to being in the same room together.
Right. Yeah. So we started the compendium right before the dark times.
Session zero. The first episode.
We're actually in the same room. So we haven't been in the same room for a podcast since then. And so we forgot how to like person.
Yes.
We forgot how to people. And according to our podcast analytics, this also is our 100th episode.
Yes.
If you count all the little like mini episodes that aren't full episodes. So I think it's kind of fitting that now that the dark times are slowly winding down, 100th episode-ish, we're back in the same room,
right,
being a bunch of awkward dorks.
Yes. I mean, we got to get back up to like game night somehow.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right?
So half orcs. This one's interesting to me because it doesn't have a full race to be half of in the player's handbook, and so it's a half of something that you don't really get the full version of or the full look at in the player's handbook that it's provided in, and so it's kind of unique because it's not like the half elf where you're like, okay, here's the full elf, and then well, here's the half elf, you're going to combine their traits with these traits. You don't really get to see that other side of it in the player's handbook right away.
Right, unless you have the monster manual where you can look and see the full version of the orc, and I guess to some lesser degree for the tieflings, which are like half devils or demons, they're also in the monster's manual, but we don't call them that because they have cooler names.
Yeah, that's true. So orcs are interesting. So for some reason, they've never interested me. And I think that's because I'm not a fantasy person,
right,
as you know.
Yes.
And for like, it's just like triggers that idea of like hardcore fantasy. And I'm like, I'm not interested in that. And so I've never actually really read into them. So when I started researching them for this episode, I was kind of like, okay, these guys are actually kind of cool.
They are really cool. Yeah. They're super cool.
And I actually drew up a half orc character because I was like, this seems interesting. I wonder what you would
do with it. Yeah.
And so I'm actually really excited to unpack this because there's a lot more there than just like brute force, grunting, caveman-esque, I don't know, like facade that I assumed orcs would have.
Yeah. Yeah. So orcs are interesting. I think the reason like top level that orcs get a bad rap and half orcs by extension is that they are fundamentally a group of people that feel everything strongly. They wear their emotions on their sleeves, and they are as diametrically opposed to the elves as you can possibly be. Right? So the elves are about refinement and living really long, and the orcs live very short lives and are about the simple pleasures of life. It doesn't mean that they are simple. It just means that dancing is fun. Like winning a foot race, that's fun. Winning an arm wrestling competition, laughing at a silly, stupid joke at a tavern, they are going to find immense pleasure and just love that.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone insults them, they will also feel unbridled rage and come straight at you because
there's no incubation period there.
No, and there's no like there's no slider for them.
Yeah.
It's binary on-off states, right? And so that's kind of their jam. And when you realize that, they're not just like rage monsters, but rather that they are people who enjoy the simple things of life, and they will act immediately, impulsively, and strongly to any kind of emotional stimulus, then they become a more clear picture comes into play. And I think that's really cool.
Have you seen the movie Inside Out?
Yeah.
they remind me a lot of anger.
Yes.
Right? Because, like, there's that one scene where he's just so angry because Dad said no dessert for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And he's raging, basically, in D&D terms. And then there's an airplane. He's like, oh, we got an airplane, everyone. And then it's back down to zero and everything's fine. And so I feel like he's a good example of what a half or an orc is. Half orc is that, like, on off, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah. There's not a lot of, like, emotional intelligence, but there is a lot of emotion when it comes to half orcs. So they can be a lot of fun to play, especially when you kind of think of it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really kind of dig them as well. I had a player in my game who was a half orc. Technically, he was a half orc. So
quarter orc?
Yes, his dad was human and his mom was half orc.
Interesting.
Yeah, but he played it really, really well, and even voluntarily chose to nerf some of his racial abilities because he was only half orc.
I'm sure that came up a lot in the dialogue.
It did. It was really great. In the roleplay. Yeah. Yeah, it was really great. But, yeah, that can be a ton of fun to play. But you want to, like, kind of dig into, like, some of the societal stuff and...
Yeah, I think an awesome place to start is when I was reading the book, I was fascinated by the fact that their origins of half-orcs, it was basically presented as... It was a sign of a peace treaty between humans and orcs. So humans and orcs would get married when there was some sort of peace agreement reached between two groups of people as a diplomatic move almost. Mm-hmm. And then that's how you got half orcs. So it really wasn't the same sense of, I don't know, passion that you assume from half elves, where it's just the human fell in love with the elf and the mm-hmm. tragic love story of the human not being able to grow old with, and with this one, it's no, you guys are going to get married because it's going to keep the peace around here. And then these half orcs are born from politics almost. And that whole structure was interesting.
Yeah. Well, kind of, I mean, that can absolutely happen because those are two sides that would need to have, diplomatic treaties if they're living and coexisting nearby each other. Whereas with elves and humans, not so much, right? I mean, you get the Tolkien, Mirkwood elves and stuff, but it's a little bit different. But also, too, if they're just kind of be living nearby each other side by side, the intermarrying is just going to happen naturally, too, so that those acts of passion can also mm-hmm. be there, too. And the reason is typically humans, we talked about it before, when we have the half races, that why is the other half always assumed to be human? And I kind of postulated that, maybe their genetic code is the most malleable. They're the least defined, and so you can kind of slap whatever aftermarket, genetic code you want on there, or something.
They're also everybody's second best friend.
Everyone's second best friend.
So
exactly.
It's easy to get along with them easier than it would be to hit it off with a different race, like an elf. I mean, a half orc, half elf would be such an interesting combo, but you'd really have to figure out that backstory on how exactly that happened.
That's really good. I got to write a note real quick. Sorry. And also, too, because humans are seen as the most willing to, compromise mm-hmm. and to work with others. And it's easy for us as, modern-day humans to go, all the other races are super weird. Why not orcs, too? Humans living in that fantasy realm and kind of mythos, maybe not as much, but it's we can remember a time where the dwarves kind of did us dirty and we were at war with them, or at least not at peace for sure. And we used to be at war with the orcs too, but now we're not. And all the more merrier, and they make great soldiers and they're fun at parties, and why not? It's just going to happen. One of my favorite comics I've kind of seen out there, on Instagram and stuff, is about a young adventurer whose both parents are alive, which is a novel concept in the first place.
Yeah, because usually it's tragic backstory. My parents were murdered when I was a young boy and I'm out to avenge.
Right.
And you're why does everyone have to be dead?
Yeah, they're getting ready to go into this cave of cold, and the half-orc barbarian's wearing a sweater, and they're all, what's with the sweater? And it flashes back to them leaving the house that afternoon, and Dad's at the table reading the newspaper, and Orc Mom is just like, hey, where are you going? You gotta wear a sweater. It's gonna be cold. We have potions, Mom! And it's just seeing this little snapshot of this really cute orc and human family with their half-orc kid who's now an adventurer. And it was just really, really sweet. And that's just what comes to mind when I'm how does that work with those parentage? But I really love it.
That reminds me of Jane and Firefly when he gets the hat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love that hat. Yeah.
I love contradictions in characters. They make the best story.
Well, it's like Wash and Zoe too, right? You know, like if they had a kid, it'd be like, that'd be the best thing. Because it's like, pretend dinosaur fighting with dad and then target practice later with mom. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, he's a leaf on the wind. So, oh, sadness.
You had to go there?
I did. Trigger a whole fan base.
Trigger warning.
You can at me. It's okay. it's fine. At Kirkle Dice. The larger cultural lore you find in the Player's Handbook for half-orcs is them, much like the half-elves, being children of two different societies. But unlike the half-elves, where they're always wishing they were the other place, it's not really like that. It is them being very much themselves in different contexts.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they grow up as orcs, they're going to be living in a very kind of rough and tumble, like, you know, survival of the fittest kind of place. And they're absolutely probably going to have old battle wounds and scars or even brands that they may relish. Like, oh, yeah, I got this gnarly scar and this one battle and this and this and this.
Yeah, oh, kind of like your badges of honor.
Yeah,
your
red badge of courage. Yeah, exactly. And then the same thing in the human realms. The difference there is the naming convention might be a little bit different, but they're still going to have fond memories of the scars and wounds of growing up and how they got them. And mm-hmm. so they look at those, both defeats and victories, with the same kind of level of passion and not fondness, but rather just with the nostalgia of the lessons learned or the times had, which I think is really good. And in many ways, that paints a very kind of, I don't know, almost healthy balance, more than any other races.
Which is ironic.
It is. There's a lot here. This is why we go through the lore. It's so great. And so they also, though, on the large part, they're not really welcomed by a lot of other races and things. So they're always going to try to find a way to kind of overcome that, whether it is just to lay low and not really draw attention to themselves, good luck with that, or they're just going to win someone over, you know, brothers, bonded in blood in battle, or just, you know, annoying the crap out of someone until finally they're your friend, right? Kind of like a Gimli, Legolas kind of vibe,
yeah.
which you don't care about.
I have seen them at least.
Okay, good, good. That's kind of their vibe there too. Now, the other thing is that orcs are typically seen as being evil, like full-blood mm-hmm. orcs, right? And there was even a controversy like a year ago of like, you know, like, I don't remember what the hashtag was, but it was basically hashtag not all orcs kind of idea. And I agree, like, when you have something that can be a playable race, don't pigeonhole them into something, right? We talked about this with Drow and other
right.
things too. But they actually, in the Player's Handbook, give a really interesting reason why that happens. And they haven't done that with anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, this is good.
Yeah, they don't just say typically they're this. They actually point to there is something about their heritage that they can't escape from. It's almost like that same kind of compatibility with like tieflings,
mm-hmm.
where they can't escape their demon past. It's like it's always
right.
there haunting them to an
right.
extent. But with this one, it's still kind of like greater being, but it's their god.
Right. So
essentially, that's always kind of egging them on.
Yeah, exactly. So Grummish is, that's how I've always pronounced it.
Okay.
I'm sure someone else is going to be like, it's Grummish. Fine, great, no problem. But
how would you say it in orc? Because orc's a very guttural language.
You're baiting me.
I am.
Grummish. I don't know.
Scottish?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah,
yeah, Scots. Let's go with Scots. Hey, actually, you know what? That's actually not bad for a like a loose template of like, well, how do you match what we've read in the lore to real world things we talked about with Dragonborn and maybe some of the Asian cultures, last name first, about honor being the best, right? Some of those elements. Maybe Scottish isn't a bad comparison here because they are very boisterous. I mean, these are the stereotypes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're very boisterous with their heart on the sleeve. They love to fight and laugh in equal measure. And they're known for being just awesome in combat and terrifying on the battlefield, you know, wearing the kilts and with the bagpipes, the whole nine yards, right? So maybe that's not too far off. I like that. And the guttural thing, too. But so the mark of Grummish. So Grummish is the god of all of orcs.
And they have a defined origin too, which is also something unique about orcs, is that typically there's not a defined where they came from. There's like nods to, it could have been this, maybe they came from here. Yeah. But this one is like, nope, this guy made him. End of story.
Right. And it doesn't matter if you worship him or not, he still lays claim to you if you're a work or a half work. And so what they say in the player's handbook, which is just wonderful to have it laid out like this, is that even if you try to live a civilized life or to temper some of that, the passion that you feel, Grummish is always, like you said, gunning for you. Like, always kind of like, no, come on, give in to a rage.
Yeah, it reminded me, when I read it, it instantly reminded me of Green Goblin in the Spider-Man movies, where it's just like he, you know, he's trying to do his thing, but the Green Goblin is keeps trying to egg him on to get him to go there. I'm like, that's what it seems like, is someone that just can't get this, like, voice out of their head trying to push them into doing something that maybe is a little questionable.
Exactly. And that's what's really cool, because we read, like, with the Drow, that they may get fed up with the Drow culture and Lolth and all the evil things that happen down there in the Underdark and leave, and Lolth is like, well, forget you, you know. But Grummish is like, no, 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 you're still mine. I have the receipt, you know. And that's really, really interesting. And so it's not necessarily always their fault. Mm-hmm. And it's a constant battle against this direct and overt divine influence that's pushing them to be a way that this god, who is demonstrably evil, wants things to go. Which makes for the great foundation of a backstory. Mm-hmm. You know, that's so good. And I think there's a lot of people who, in a lesser way, in real life, because we always bring ourselves into our characters, we can say we don't faults. It happens when you're trying not to do it, and then later, like 10 sessions in, you're like, oh crap,
I did it again.
Yeah, there it is.
This is me again.
Yeah, and there's my dad, and there's my mom, and there's me. Yeah. A lot of people grew up in different religious traditions and spend the rest of their lives basically trying to get away from them if they were really terrible or oppressive or legalistic. And so there is a lot of fodder that I think is pretty common to a lot of people to play into this aspect from the half-orcs, which I think is really, really awesome. And like you know, digging into, like, what if I made a character that was half-orc? And getting to explore that, I think there's just a lot there in the lore that you could use that you'll miss if you just jump straight to the stat blocks.
Right, yeah. And, I mean, it's interesting, too, because I think, if I remember right when I was reading, half-orcs tend to gravitate more towards living in the human populations instead of the orc populations. Not so much because they're, like, excommunicated from one or the other, the same way that maybe you might have with, like, an elf-human situation. But what's interesting is if you have this half-orc that's living among humans, they don't hear these voices. Right?
They have these same urges, yeah.
What a strange way to be brought up with nobody else that can hear this voice, especially if maybe you weren't brought up in orc culture and you've never been told about Grummish, but you've got this like voice almost thing in the back of your head, but no one else can hear it. What would that do for your character, for your sanity, for your thought processes, for your behaviors, your actions? Like, everything just opens up in a really interesting way.
I love the scene that just popped in my head of like the young half-orc going to the cleric and be like, hey, I hear voices. And they're like, yeah, me too. Yeah, but I'm...
No, you don't understand.
I'm a barbarian, though, not a cleric. So what's up with that? Oh, you so Grummish? Who is that? You know, and getting kind of like the divine lore dump. Like, I think it's a fun scene. I like that a lot.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just... The culture there, I think, or the history there is so rich that I think that's really what informs the coolest part of the character. You're going to get some really awesome abilities, which we'll go over in a bit, but that's the part that like has the most meat to it.
Yeah, it really is. I think that might do it for the lore, actually. I don't know if there's anything else I was looking at that I kind of pinged my interest.
Oh, the other thing that I do remember is that they tend to select a name that makes the most sense in the culture they're living in. So if they're living in an orc culture, they're going to adopt a name that is orcish primarily. Mm-hmm. Whereas if they're living amongst humans, they're probably going to pick a name that makes more sense in a human environment. So, and I didn't really pick up on it as the whole like, oh, I want to just blend in. It was more of, I don't know if it's like a respect thing or like this is the environment that I'm in. I don't know how you would...
I think it's just being a product of the environment you're raised, right? You know, it's just, I don't think it's more complicated than that. I think they just mimic the society that they're born and raised in, like we all do, and just roll with that.
It'll be interesting, too, in a role play, like, your party only knows them by their human name, and then all of a sudden you encounter a bunch of orcs, and they introduce themselves as something completely different.
Yeah.
And the party's like, wait, who? Mm-hmm. That's not who you are, or some kind of weird, interesting dynamic there.
It's like high school Spanish class where you have to pick a Spanish name.
Yes.
Especially if your name doesn't work in Spanish, like Jason. J's are weird. In French, too, actually. So, yeah.
Well, you're just weird, so it fits.
Well, yeah, I'm okay with it. Yeah. So, yeah, so that's really interesting that it really is, there's a duality here, to kind of put a pin in it, is there's a duality of being adaptable to the situation and the environment they're grown up in, but yet there's also this inner life that is somewhat immutable and beyond their choice or control, whether it's the passion or the influence of Grummish kind of pushing their own will on things. And so there's change, but then there's also these inner things that are really hard to change. And so it makes for some really complex characters.
Yeah, so let's unpack what they look like.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Right? Because it's a very interesting blend of a lot of different things, I think, in their own way. They're very distinct, first of all. If you see a half-orc, there's no question about what they are. Like, you know it's a half-orc.
Yeah, exactly. Unlike the half-elves, where it's like, are they human or the elf? I don't know.
Yeah, they look one to the other.
Right.
They thing. Can it's like, they no, can you know what this is.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so half-orcs, they typically have kind of a grayish, dusky skin. Usually there are tusks or talons, not talons, basically the big underbite with the two tusks coming out, basically. More of a sloping forehead, the jutting jaw, and also they're massive. Like, they're really big.
Really beefy humans, because they can start at 5 feet,
right.
So they can be kind of average to short size as far as like a human goes, but you can get up to 7 feet,
yes.
And their weight can get up to like 250 or 300 pounds,
right? Yeah, 180,
all
like
muscle,
250,
assumingly.
All muscle. Yeah, so they're just like linebackers, basically. They're just these big dudes, and they're physically imposing. They've got that the tusks and the skin coloration that really just marks them. Oh, that's a half-orc. It's unmistakable, and you just can't hide it. And I think a lot of them just, they don't.
Yeah.
And again, too, because of the cultures, especially if they grew up in orc culture as opposed to human culture, there's going to be war wounds, there's going to be brands that they may or may not try to hide, or even, revel in the fact that they have a tattoo or brand over their eye, or there's this wicked scar on their arm or something like that. So it does tend to give them a very intimidating and wild look. It's like when you're at the grocery store and you see like a mom with a couple of like little kids, and there's a dude coming down with like full sleeve tattoos, biker vest, and they're like, she's like shushing the kids over to one side, and it's like, I know that dude from church. It's fine. But like, it's a very intimidating presence. And you're like, okay, yeah. So it makes a lot of sense.
Right. But their size is still medium.
They're still medium. Right? Yes. I don't think.
That's such medium is interesting
because
it's such a big range.
Yeah.
You can be a very like broad swath of sizes and still fit into a medium category.
Yeah. As long as you're like around 5 feet to like 8.5, 9 feet, you're medium.
Like 80 pounds to 300, 400 pounds. Like, I don't know. It's just a very...
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Yeah, but then again, the two, like, humans in real life range that much too.
That's true.
Right? Like, I work with a guy who is 6'5", and I used to work with a girl who was 4'11", and used to say that, no, I'm not a dwarf or something like that, because I meet the height requirement to not be that. And she was very proud and protective of it. And I know people who were like super skinny like me, and other people who were just massive slabs of beef. And is that okay to say? I don't even know.
You guys will find out in the comments. The internet
massive
will tell us.
Slab of beef here. I enjoyed your podcast. Thanks, man. Don't hurt me, please. But yeah, you look at the swath of humanity, you have like just crazy, crazy stuff. Like, you see those pictures of people who are cheerleaders and WNBA players, and they're like both human women of about the same age, and one is 4'11", the other one is 6'8". And you see them together, and you're like, wow, that's incredible. So same thing for medium creatures. Right. It's a huge, huge span. Right.
And I think, too, even though they're, like, girthier and bulkier, like we talked about in some of the other episodes, armor, that kind of stuff, would still fit them without a lot of, like, modifications needed. Yeah. You know, you could just assume you'd loosen some of the laces to get it to the right, you know, right. muscle shape.
No, yeah, exactly. And a lot of armor is made like that. Even, you know, when you go to a Ren Fair, you can see that there's like buckles and straps and
under tunics. Usually a couple zippers.
Yeah, hidden zippers, zip ties, you know, that kind of stuff. But you're right, though, that huge range of, you know, 5 feet difference of different medium creatures, that could pose some problems, but this is the one place, thankfully, D&D 5th edition doesn't really lean into that.
It's kind of look the other way.
It's kind of hand wave that away and stuff. So yeah. I'm kind of happy about that. So
one thing I did find interesting about half-orcs is that if memory serves, so far they're one of the races with one of the shortest lifespans we've seen so far, which is shorter than humans, which is what fascinated me, because they go up to about 75, and I think humans aren't much above. I think they're like 80.
Yeah.
But that was really interesting that they have the shortest lifespan out of any of the races that we've seen so far.
Yeah. In fact, they mature really, really quickly, like the Dragonborn.
Yeah, like 13, 14, I think.
Yeah, so half-orcs, like about 15, I think, is the number that I saw, or 14, and they'll live up to 75. But if you look at orcs, just plain orcs, they mature at like age 12 and live to 60. So the human influence actually is a benefit there, but it's still, like you said, one of the shorter lived races that we've come across so far, especially in the Player's Handbook.
Right. There's no confusion like there is with tieflings about like what they could or couldn't look like, or the colors of their skin or eyes, or I mean, obviously you can homebrew anything you want. But per the Player's Handbook, it's just kind of straightforward with this is what an orc looks like.
It is pretty straightforward, and I don't think I've seen any real like wild cosplay of half-orcs or different variations. Although I will say this, I have seen like the darker gray skin tones, but I've also seen like straight up green, like just Hulk green.
Well, actually, let's talk about that real quick, because I was trying to decide if a Hulk would be a good comparison to a half-orc. I don't really totally feel like it fits, but at the same time, it's that like on-off like we were talking about. Do you think that conceptually a character like the Hulk or you know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, or some of these well-known fiction characters that have like that one side or the other, where they're just going to be in like a huge rage and destroy everything versus a very palatable, kind, thoughtful person. Do you feel like that it kind of fits the mold of a half-orc if people are looking for a concept to kind of define them by?
Yeah, I think so. And it goes back to that passion, right? I think half-orcs, according to the lore, are not one-note passions, right? It's about they do all things to the extreme. Whether that is anger or laughter or joy or depression or whatever it is, they don't have a slider. It's on off switch. But when it comes to the element of anger or rage or battle, the Hulk is a really great example, because physically imposing, really big, strong, feels anger as a standard action, you know, feels rage as a free action. And so I think that maps really easily to the Hulk. And I've seen some things on Reddit and stuff where they make Marvel characters into D&D, and they almost always choose half-orc as the race for that.
So would you say that Ganon is an orc or a half-orc?
He's a pig.
I know, but tusks and... like, if we're trying to... Like, I don't half-orc. Know. Half-orc, you think?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
I always joke because I just cannot get over that it's Calamity Ganon. I'm like, that feels like a character out of the old West films. Like, oh Calamity Ganon. I just can't take it seriously.
Well, if you say it with that accent, sure.
Yeah. How else would you say it?
Calamity Ganon. Like that.
Fine.
I'm not here to mess with your fun.
Anyways.
All right, you were getting into
some of
the stats.
Yeah, so that's what they look like. So, yeah, let's open up as to some of the really cool things that you get by playing a half-orc, and then we'll dive into some ways that maybe you can use those traits and kind of leverage them as a character to just build a really interesting, diverse character.
Yep, let's do it. So, half-orc traits, the ability score increase, strength gets +2, and the constitution gets +1. Makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. They're very physical, very martial, melee kind of characters. Do what you want, but that's kind of where they lean. We talked about this before. The age, they're going to mature around 14, live to be about 65 years old. One of the shorter lived races. Alignment, again, alignment is descriptive, not prescriptive. So half-orcs inherit a tendency towards chaos from their orc parents and are not strongly inclined towards good. Half-orcs raised among orcs and willing to live out their lives among them are usually evil. And we've kind of talked about this before, that they are products of their environment, mm-hmm. and it doesn't seem like there's a lot of like second-guessing or worrying about that. But right. if they're raised in an environment where you know, we typically see certain actions as evil, then they're just kind of go along with it. Like, they mm-hmm. don't really have a strong reason to like not do that.
I also like that it specifies like raised in chaos, mm-hmm. because chaos doesn't inherently have to be evil, and there is a chaotic alignment.
Yep.
Where you, I think like a chaotic neutral would be the ideal alignment for a half orc, because you were raised in that concept where chaos is just the norm. That's just mm-hmm. mode of operating for you. And then neutral kind of comes from a full orc would tend towards the evil. But since you're part human, but you still have that voice in your head, mm-hmm. like you're kind of right in the middle. The pendulum's not necessarily going to swing one way or the other. I mean, obviously, again, you could write your backstory to be a lawful good half-orc, which would be really interesting.
Yeah, I could see very easily them like joining some kind of divine order that helps paladin. Them to, like to be a paladin or even a cleric, mm-hmm. where they want that discipline, and they, because they feel like they need divine help to go against a divine, you know, kind of mandate or needling from Grummish. So that makes a lot of sense. They might choose like Helm or something like that, where it's very rigid and disciplined and stuff. Like, so my father-in-law is an old school ADD kid, right? Like, the stories they used to tell was that the barber wouldn't cut his hair because he wouldn't stop moving in the chair and he was going to hurt him. And so he joined the military like the second he could, because he needed that discipline in his life. Otherwise, mm-hmm. he was going to be a basket case. And so I could see something
rigidity,
like that going on.
Yeah,
that discipline of you do the same thing the same way every time. And so I could very easily see that. But again, with alignments, do what you want. But yeah, so size, medium for half orcs, range between, you know, 5, 6, 7 feet. But the size is still medium for all intents and purposes, you know, strength categories, all that kind of good stuff. And then speed, 30 feet, not really surprising there. And then they also have dark vision. Bright light, no problem. Dim light, you see like it's bright light. And complete darkness, you see like it's dim light, but again, shades of gray.
Right. I will say, when I read that passage, which is one of, I mean, it just reinforced why we started this podcast. I thought it was implying that they have superior dark vision, because when you read the passage, it says you have superior vision mm-hmm. in dark or dim conditions. And I was like, wizards, could you separate some of these words a little bit?
Yes.
Because I had to read it 3 or 4 times to be like, no. It's just regular dark vision, but they're using the word superior because it's better than other people in dark environments, which is what dark vision is. So that was just kind of like, wait, which one is it?
Just say excellent, not superior.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so they're one of the dark vision race options, which is always great. And then they also get a bonus skill. They have proficiency in the intimidation skill, which makes a lot of sense, right? Mm-hmm. And the listing, I love it, is called menacing.
They just stand next to someone and growl.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, can I help you?
Guttural throat
noises. I want your snow cone. Here you go. I'm Batman. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so they're intimidating just by the nature of who they are. And again, I think with the lore we talked about before, that makes perfect sense. And it doesn't mean that they are always like, you know, the muscle for a mob boss looking for a shakedown. That's just how they come across.
It would be really entertaining as a DM to set up a mechanic for someone playing a half-orc where when they're trying to do something like ask for an ice cream cone, they might unintentionally be intimidating, like, you know, making a roll for that or a check and like having to deal with the mechanics of like being scary when they're just trying to say thank you or something.
Yeah, which goes along with the whole Grummish thing too. So it's like, I want to try to do this or make a persuasion check. I got a 5. Okay, now I need you to make an intimidation check. Because what happened was that red super sketch, and now they're terrified. I want to know how terrified they are. You may still get the thing you're asking for, but not the way you were hoping.
This That's town now really fears good. You, not loves you, but you're still welcome there.
Yeah. You're Grog, stealer of snow cones.
Explain that one in your next tavern.
I'm cool with it. Yeah. And then this is one of the cool, very, very cool abilities. So they have something called Relentless Endurance. Basically, anything that's going to reduce them to 0 hit points but doesn't kill them outright, like, you know, Disintegration or Power Word Kill or that, like...
double damage.
The double their max hit point deficit we talked about. It instead reduces you to 1 hit point. And they can just shake it off.
Which is, especially for a level 1 character, oh my gosh, it's phenomenal.
You get a do-over. But it only works once a day.
Right.
Once per long rest. So after you kind of pop off that ability, now you have to be careful. But this is really great, like where the memes come from, where the barbarian's like, I still have 1 hit point. Let's keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, that's really, really great because it's going to save you a healing spell or possibly a resurrection. but just, you know, don't overdo it too much because it could bite you in the butt. But it's great to have that. They get to fight with Annette. They get to go into combat with Annette.
Yeah.
Which is really great, so I like that.
But the first time they fall in the net, it gets a tear and they have to...
Yeah, they have to mend it every night, yeah.
I'm taking that metaphor a little too far. Like we do.
Flying Graysons. Okay, so then they have Savage Attacks. So what this is basically it lets them do more damage on critical hits with melee weapons.
It's also amazing.
Also amazing, yeah. And so anytime they do a crit with a melee attack, then they can take whatever the weapon damage was from that weapon, the weapon die... and roll another one as well and add that to the crit.
Which is awesome, because like if you get like 1d6 for your weapon damage, if you crit, you now get 2d6s. And with this particular trait, now you get 3d6s. So you just tripled your damage in one roll. And like once you get to weapons that are maybe doing like higher dice or double dice.
Right, so like, you get into like great swords and that kind of stuff and warhammers.
Yeah.
Now you have it's 2d6, crit, 4d6... Savage Attacks, 66.
66 on one attack. Oh my gosh, it's so great.
It's so great. And I play in games where the house rule is when you crit, you do max damage, and then you roll it again to see what else happens.
Mm.
So that would be 66, 6 times 6, and now roll it again as well. So you could easily just like be doing like 75 points of damage in a row. It's just
at
ridiculous.
Level 1.
Basically, yeah, you could. Yeah.
Which is also incredible. Like, level 1 characters are usually, like, limping along, and Half-Orc would be over there like, I'm good, guys.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's go.
That's so good. Imagine Divine Smite on top of that as well. Okay, I'm not even getting there now. So I'm making new characters now in my head. And then languages, the kind of the norm, they read, write, and speak human, common, oh my gosh. And then they also the same for Orcish, which has a nice little note here. It says that it doesn't have its own script, but uses the Dwarven alphabet, which also prizes hard consonants and weird harsh guttural sounds as well.
I wonder what the connection, I mean, other than obviously the like the auditory like sound of the language, I wonder if there's a connection there between dwarves and orcs, like somewhere down the line, they just like, yeah, we'll use this. Like,
yeah, I think it's just
very curious.
Yeah, it's linguistic opportunity attacks. You know, they're just like, they had the chance and they took it. And so there's like, oh, we'll use this. Because I don't know if common lends itself towards the way they like to speak, but maybe the dwarven script and language is a bit more akin where they're like, okay, yeah, this makes sense to me. And so it was just easier to adopt that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, basically.
So yeah, you get 2 languages then.
Mm-hmm.
Which also makes sense with being a half something, like
yeah,
with half
that's
elf.
Pretty, that's
like
pretty
you've
typical,
got
yeah.
two sides going on, so it makes sense that you would, you know, it's like when you have an American mom and a Spanish dad, like you're probably going to learn
both
English
languages.
And Spanish
right.
because they're both available to you in the household.
Yeah.
So
exactly. And that always, what's great here is that it's a racial feature, but it's assumptive on cultural background.
Yeah.
And your backstory. So it may make sense at your table not to take that, but take something else, because maybe you were raised only by your human parent who was working in a, you know, an elven city.
Yes.
As like a shipbuilder or something, right?
You speak fluent elven and surprise common. The crap out of the next elf that you come across.
Right, and you don't speak any orc at all, you know? But who knows? So going back to the one where like they don't know anything about Grummish. Grummish whispers to them in their dreams, but only an orc.
And they don't even know what they're saying.
Oh, okay, we have to make this character now. Yes. This is great. All right.
They just keep a journal trying to, like, write out the, like, sounds that they heard, but they're so guttural that it's just, like, scribbles because it's in
calligraphy,
Elvish.
Like,
because, like,
Elvish,
how do you
yeah.
translate guttural sounds into Elvish script? And just, like, that's so great.
It's like, to pronounce this, I recommend eating a lot of cheese first. The mucus is really essential to...
Anyways,
okay,
so those are the starting level one ability racial traits. You don't get any additional traits leveling up your half orc. That's just what you get.
No innate magic. It's all very martially based, and there's nothing that really scales with level on this, unlike some other things like, you know, dragonborn, tieflings, drow, that kind of stuff.
Right. Now, like we said at the beginning, what's interesting about this character within the framework of the player's handbook is you're not given the reference of an orc to be able to compare and contrast it to. And half-orcs do not have a subrace. Like, it's what you see is what you get.
Right.
With the exception of...
Well, so normally we would talk about half-races now.
Subraces.
Subraces now.
Two halves.
And usually if we're surprised that something does... actually
exist.
Have one is because of Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide. And I looked in Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide, and there's not one.
Which is the first
thankfully,
for, like, the last six episodes.
Which is a first for us. How could you let us down, Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide? But in Volos, they actually make the full orc a playable race.
Right, because in the Monster Manual, it's meant to be a monster. You're not necessarily seeing the racial traits and some of these other benefits. You're just getting the hit points.
You've got the stat blocks and lore, and that's about it. Right. So Volos gives us another option to play a full orc. And so in lieu of their lack of any kind of sub-races, I thought we'd talk about that instead.
Yeah.
Okay. So, very similar, a couple notable differences. So ability score increase, exactly the same. Plus 2 to strength, plus 1 to constitution. And then here's where the age range gets different. They mature at age 12 and live to 50.
50?
50.
Wow.
And I don't know if that's life expectancy or cultural.
I mean, when you drink and party that much.
Yeah, or, you know, every conflict is decided by blows and blades.
Do you watch Eddie Izzard?
Yes.
The comedian. Yeah. Tea and cake or death.
Yeah. Cake or death? I'm not cake. Yeah, cake, please.
This is the orcs.
Yes.
It's like one or the other. You get death or you get tea.
Yeah. And the half orcs realize they can choose or.
Yes.
Or please. Oh, may I allow you? Eddie Izzard is amazing. So very short lives. It's the whole idea that the candle that burns the brightest burns the shortest, and so that passion that's there might be part of this as well, but. Anyway, so, and then here, alignment really comes into play because these were initially, throughout all the editions, meant to be foes to fight,
right.
Monsters to maim, and they're, of course, evil.
Aren't they, I mean, this I could be making this up, but aren't they typically, like, everyone's enemy?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like
yes.
when you see a lot of things, like a lot of different races or characters just have a beef with orcs, which
yes.
makes sense because if they're... you know, inherently evil on some scale, they're probably out there just doing whatever and not thinking twice about
right. There's not a lot of like
purpose.
Yeah, there's not a lot of like deliberating like whether or not we should do this. They have stuff and we don't. We should go get it.
Yes.
Right. And it invokes kind of like feelings of like Mulan, like where everyone's afraid of the Mongol hordes that are coming, right? And so in fantasy, Tolkien did this, everyone does this. Everyone's kind of always afraid that over the next rise, there's going to be just a swarm,
a horde of orcs,
basically. Yeah. In Munchkin, there's even a really great card. There's a monster card. I think I don't remember exactly, but I think it's like 6,294 orcs is the card. I'm like, I love that card. But so here, orcs are vicious raiders who believe the world should be theirs. Sure, why not? I respect strength above all else. Believe the strong must bully the weak to ensure weakness does not spread like a disease. They are usually chaotic evil. But of course,
it's interesting. Weakness being a disease, mm-hmm. like the framework again, talking about evil is in the eye of the beholder in its right. own right. Like if weakness is a disease,
yeah,
get rid of the disease.
Yeah,
like I like that wording.
It is, and it helps you kind of understand. Like, okay, maybe they're not evil. They're just, the culture is just very, very different in priorities than what the characters or players might be used to. And I could see that. In a way, it's very Darwinian, right? It's the survival of the fittest. And, mm-hmm. You know, the strong are going to propagate strong. So let's always edge towards that direction. So mm-hmm. it makes sense for them. But of course, with a playable race, do what you want when it comes to alignments. I mean, it can be like Ferdinand the Bull, right?
Mm-hmm.
Vicious and strong, and you just like to smell flowers. Let it go, right? Size, so usually over 6 feet tall, up to 7 feet tall. 230 to 280 pounds, very big and beefy. It sounds though like the half-orc actually has a bigger range of being even taller and heavier. And so I think that's another unforeseen benefit to being a half-human as well, mm-hmm. is kind of, it unlocks some more like growth trees and unlockable skills for them a little bit. So, and then their size is medium, but there's an addendum to that, and I'll get to that in a second. Speed, 30 feet. Dark vision, same as before. Out to 60, they can see in dim and dark light.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll kind of get to this now.
So almost that, all of that pretty much is the same.
Yes.
Which is interesting, for especially the ability scores, because
mm-hmm.
typically with half races, you're getting some of the human side, but
right.
you're getting the exact same ability scores being a half orc as you mm-hmm. would a full orc,
yep.
which is a little bit different than maybe some it of the is. Other races.
So there's some other things that full orcs get that the half orcs don't, and vice versa, mm-hmm. and that's kind of where they start to delineate, but it doesn't change as much as you would expect to see in some of the other ones,
mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit more nuanced. Even though they're medium, they have something called a powerful build. When we talk about Goliath later, they have this too, where even though they are medium, big medium, but medium, they always count as one size larger when you're trying to figure out the carrying capacity and how much they can push, lift, and drag.
Oh, that's not confusing.
Right. And so okay. there is a table. I don't know where it is. It's in the DMG. But basically, you know how much you can lift because of your strength score. If you're large,
right.
it's times two. So for them, if they could conceivably carry like 230 pounds according to their 250 pounds because of their strength score, because they're in full orc, they count as being large. So that's actually 500 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. It doesn't change like combat prowess or anything like that, mm-hmm. but as
like
far
lifting
as
a boulder out of the way,
exactly,
or...
yeah, throwing a horse, or just being the guy.
Have
who
personal
carries...
experience with that one?
No, I okay. for legal reasons can't talk about
right.
it. But also like just the guy who carries everything, right? Or being able to carry really massive weapons, it's not being a very big burden to them, things mm-hmm. like that. So it's kind of fun that way. They also have something called aggressive. So as a bonus action, they can move their whole speed toward an enemy as long as they're that they can see or hear, as long as they will end that movement closer to that enemy. So as a bonus action, just every turn.
Oh, so you could get twice movement, basically.
Yes.
Okay.
So
I was wondering,
can,
like, why wouldn't you just
they can
move?
Rush in? They can rush
but
in.
It's a
then as a bonus action, rush in again. As long as you're moving closer to an enemy,
right,
and then attack.
Because usually something like dash, that is your action, and so
right.
you can move
you
twice as far, but you can't attack at the end of it.
Right, unless you're like a rogue mm-hmm. with, you know,
yeah, there's
their
always
special
exceptions.
Thing, or monks who have to spend key points, full orcs, they just get to do it because they feel like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're aggressive. And then they have primal intuition. This is where the proficiencies come into play. They can pick from a list, two from the list of animal handling, insight, intimidation, medicine, nature, perception, and survival, which makes a lot of sense. Although, insight is a very interesting one, but I like it. And then, of course, languages, they speak, read, write, common, and orc.
Yeah. So you still get your two languages, but they're determined.
Right, which is pretty standard, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, so that's the orc, the full orc playable race for D&D.
Right, and their, I mean, their visual appearance is going to be a little bit more imposing.
Yes.
Right, because you don't have that human watering it down, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, exactly. So they're going to have some of the same problems, and they can choose from their list the intimidation. Instead of it just being given to them automatically like the half works. But it doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still very imposing and impulsive and aggressive by nature. So it's a little bit different.
So why would... I feel like half orc... Well, or maybe full orcs. What would trigger an orc or half orc to go out and adventuring? Is just the idea of like glory and honor? Because if they like to party and have a good time, they probably want to stay where there's parties and good times.
Right, but fighting is also a good time.
That's true, and you've got Grung back there being like, go kill something.
Yeah, yeah. Grung is being all like, kill them. Kill your parents. Yeah. like backmasking on the old ladies' records. But yeah, also, for them, I think the answer might be the easiest of all. Why not?
That's true.
Right? They're just like, sounds fun. Let's do it.
Impulsive in their own way, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to go to this next city and see what trouble we get into. You in?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, of course. Why did you ask me that question? Of course I'm in. I'm already packed. Let's go. You know?
So, yeah, the clearest, I think the obvious choice for class pairings when you're talking about orcs or half-orcs.
Or wine and cheese pairings.
Yes, is barbarian.
Yes.
But I feel like that is too easy. I'd be interested to look at some of the other classes that would be a really interesting companion to that race. That's not just the brute force, like continuation of that concept of brute force.
Yeah,
because that's going to work well for you. Like if you want to be a tank, be an orc barbarian or a half orc barbarian, and you're going to do lot of damage.
That's the thing. Like if you go with the grain for your class race pairing, anything that's martially oriented is going to be great. In fact, if I remember correctly, on the page for Paladin in the Player's Handbook, the example they show artistically is a half-orc.
Oh, okay.
If I remember this correctly. And so Fighter would
Paladin
be great.
Paladin makes a lot of sense.
Paladin would be awesome, especially if they're driven by, as we said before, Grummish, or a different deity as a way to kind of temper those urges. But yeah, anytime that you're going to be a frontline fighter, a kind of a tank, using melee weapons, especially if they do a lot of damage, that's perfectly great to go that way. To go against the grain, kind of, off-label usage of the class race pairings, I think it would be really interesting to do like a rogue.
Yeah.
Because it's a class inherently suited to subtlety.
Yeah.
With a race inherently not suited to subtlety.
See, I was thinking wizard, because you usually think of squishy little wizard.
Right.
And so you're pairing squishy little wizard with, like, big built race.
And there's a stigma with half-orcs that they're dumb, but there's nothing in the lore, nothing in the stats that they have to be dumb. Not at all.
Right.
Not at all. And wizards are typically, like you said, really squishy, skinny kids, like myself. They don't have to be. You know, that wizard can be swole. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think also we've seen this in Critical Role where Ford is a warlock, which makes a lot of sense.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that a lot, that half-orcs and orcs are, like, really great companions with warlocks.
Right, because there's Pact of the Blade, which gives them a lot of that martial stuff back in there, too. So it ends up being a kind of a backdoor way into those martial classes again, which is kind of fun.
And it's the, like, the whole sell your soul for this one thing is, like, why not? it goes back to that, not? Like, yeah, why not?
Yeah, sure.
I'm not going to live that long.
Yeah, my soul.
Right? My life is already short.
Am I currently doing anything with the soul? I'm not really aware. I'm not? Great. You can have it. Sure. I'll take a
look. Maybe you'll get rid of Grung. Maybe you take my soul. I'll go with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Will Grummish go with you now? Because that would be great.
Yeah.
Is there a fine print that I could look at in this contract? Also, I unsurprisingly would say Bard.
You just think Bards go with everything. And they do go with everything.
That's because they do go with everything, Casey. Thank you for making my point. But no, because think about it. Like, that passion, that joie de vivre of just like wherever the road takes you, and just like, yeah, I'm gonna be singing in here, and I'm in a bar fight over there, and later I'll be in the dungeon.
I mean, you could even go with like the circus performer act of like strongman.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
Or and, like the people that come to like pay $5 to see the scariest creature around, or I don't know. Like
yeah.
you could be the performer that's maybe the like Ferdinand likes to smell the flowers, but you put on the show of being the big scary
yeah.
evil creature and people pay you money to just look at you and you're like, okay, that's easy.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like doing an illusion for like the barker. It's like, you're not even really there, you run the whole show, but you're
right.
the one in the cage. That'd be really awesome. Yeah, and there's so many different colleges now for bards that you could find one that would make a lot of sense going with that kind of you know, passion on your sleeve kind of idea. So that's kind of where my mind goes. Also, I was thinking about this earlier today in the car, Artificer would be really a lot of fun.
That's not one that we've really brought into pairings much until this point.
It's
other
not,
than
because
gnomes,
it's relatively new.
It.
Like,
yeah.
Artificer has come out since we've started the podcast.
See, Artificer seems like... And again, there's nothing to imply this, and it's just stereotype meets stereotyping this race, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But they seem like they wouldn't be able to finesse, like, tools or other things. Like, I think of Artificer, and I think of, like, oh, you're building a pocket watch with these tiny little gears
right.
and this other stuff. That's not always
but
true.
But there's Artificer armorers, too, who are making the cool gauntlets
right.
and shields and breastplates and all this other cool stuff. Like,
he couldn't... The half-orc could never find armor that fit him right, so he's
yeah.
like, I'm just gonna
yeah,
make it!
Screw it, I'll do it myself! You know,
take my anger out of this piece
yeah.
of metal.
Is he okay? Yeah, he's been forging for 36 hours straight. I don't know how he does it. I mean, it looks great, but wow.
And I'd like to rage.
Yeah, I would like to rage. On what? The armor. Okay.
You make it in half
you
the
time. Can have a bonus plus two there. Yeah, so yeah, that's how I would do it. I think it'd be a lot of fun. And then now, after talking about all this stuff with the half-orcs, I'm actually kind of excited to play a half-orc.
Right, I think we just labeled almost every class.
Yeah,
like barring maybe
good.
Two.
Yeah,
like you can do all of them basically.
Yeah,
it's surprisingly versatile when it looks on the surface like
right.
it would be very much pigeonholing you into
right.
one
because it
area.
Adds new dimensions to the classes that make them kind of like come alive and shimmer and shine in a different way. And so it's nice to be able to pull out these aspects of the classes by putting a different race inside.
Right, and this is going to be maybe a little bit of an odd, different way to end this, but. Something that just came up to me is that sometimes there are dialogues about DMs that are struggling with players at the table
yeah.
because they're using the excuse of that's just what my character would do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you would have to be cautious as a player that you're not necessarily going to play an orc just so that you can pick a fight with every other player that's there when they say something that you don't like. Because I think it would be easy to
yes.
unintentionally make everyone else have a bad time
right.
while still kind of being in character.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
does that make sense?
It absolutely does, because the excuse of that's just what my character would do is oftentimes a cop-out for I want to be a jerk or
yes.
be selfish at the table
and
in this collaborative game.
This race is, like, built for it's
right.
letting you be a jerk if that's,
well,
like...
Well, it could be. You could absolutely focus on those elements of it. And so, like with everything, everyone at the table has a job to work together with everyone else on the table in their particular roles. And so that you have to make sure that you're having fun, but also they're having fun too. And sometimes being the loose cannon that gets the party in trouble when it would be so easy if we just didn't get into a bar fight at this one town, please. They're like, hey, those orphans started it. I'm not going to back down. You know, I can see that, but if you do it every single time, then it's could get old really quick.
So what are some tips that you might have for a DM that's potentially running into an issue like this with a player that's playing an orc? Especially because, like, with clerics, it's
mm-hmm.
easy to be like, oh, your god turns their back on you
mm-hmm.
because you're not following their domain. But with this one, like, Grummish is very proud of you, actually, and so I'm not sure what to do here.
Do you want to multiclass to warlock? Because I think there's a really strong case now.
Yeah, so what would you recommend? I mean, obviously, communication is key,
yeah.
but have you ever run into situations
like
this?
Yeah, so there's two ways to do this. One is outside the game, one is inside the game. Outside the game, just talk to them.
Yeah.
I know that a lot of people who play D&D do not like confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do it.
Which is funny because I think people play D&D because they have a safe place to have confrontation.
Yes.
Right? Because they're not comfortable or
it's
they're
not
going to do it in real
doing
life.
It. They get to disassociate
yeah.
and put it on
exactly.
their fictional character. But you just have to do it. And it's very much that Benjamin Franklin quote, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Hit it early. Pull them aside. Hey, I know that you're having a blast. other people aren't having fun, and I need you to just think about, like, as you play your character, is this going to derail the story in a way that's just not going to make it fun for me as the DM? Or is this going to come tedious to the people at the table as they're going to have to, like, give up on their own personal narratives and their own personal goals to right. keep getting you out of trouble or to get into the hijinks you want to do to the point where they just don't want to play with you anymore. And we don't want to see that happen. The rule, the way to take care of it inside the game is simple. Real world consequences. And because I'm thinking in particular, Critical Role, Campaign 1, Scanlan and Grog, they get into so much trouble everywhere they go. Like towns that are really critical for them to be able to visit at will, where they're murdering shopkeeps and guards and hiding the bodies poorly and almost getting kicked out. It's like, oh man, this is going to go bad. And Matt just leans into it like, hey, this is what you guys chose. Because it's like, they're like, this is just what my character would do. And he's like, this is just what my town would do. You guys are about to get in a heap of trouble. And the rest of the party is like, we need this town. Stop it. You know, it was funny, but they also knew where to pump the brakes. So I think real consequences for real actions is a great way to do that in the game.
Right. If you don't have enough dice to make it through your game after every single set gets put in dice jail, make sure you check out the Critical Dice and their Endless Bag of Dice. You can get a new set of dice delivered to your doorstep every single month for as low as $7 a month. Compendium listeners can actually also get a special offer by using the code Compendium, C-O-M-P-E-N-D-M, for 50% off of your first month of dice. Just go to thecriticaldice.com and use that code at checkout. We hope you guys enjoyed listening to our conversation this week. If you haven't done so already, it would really help us out if you would take a moment to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review. The Compendium is also on Patreon. So if you like listening, that is a great way to help contribute to the content that we create. New episodes are available every Tuesday and Friday, or Monday and Thursday if you're a patron. And you can always keep up with us between episodes by following us on social media. Just look up The Compendium, that's C-O-M-P-E-N-D-M, on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Jason also shares a bunch of great content and plot hooks on his page, The Critical Dice, so make sure that you check him out and follow him as well. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we will see you guys next time.